Hi, guys. Here's my morning routine. First, I drink olive oil. Next, I take an ice bath. Ooh, feeling super healthy.
If your health advice sounds strange coming from a kid, maybe it's just strange. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com, Cygnos.com, with code SPARK. Cygnos.
In 2015, I was 19 and working for the summer at a Bible camp for inner city kids. I'm going to leave out the city name, but just know that obviously crime occurs frequently in big cities, and this one was no different. I had been assured that this neighborhood, however, was in the process of being gentrified, and that they had even just opened up a hipster coffee shop and dog park right down the street. Just to give you a really clear visual, the neighborhood had dilapidated houses with trash out in the front right next to the houses with immaculate yards and square modern architecture. The Bible camp where I was working was essentially just a huge two-story house with a large fenced-in yard. Again, we were assured that we were safe though because we had bars on the windows and the outer doors locked automatically when they shut. The camp was conducted downstairs, and the summer counselors, which there were four of us, lived in the small upstairs that was off limits during the day to the kids. Our camp ran 5 days a week, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m.
And then the time was ours to explore the city. That or rest, or really whatever we wanted to do.
That's probably enough to get to the story now. I love a good setting, and it could be important later. One weekend night in July, we were all just hanging out in the house making a spaghetti dinner. We each got our own stipend for food, so we divided it accordingly for meals, then bought our own snacks and shit. We were also in charge of preparing lunch and snacks for the kids on camp days, so we had two fridges and two pantries. As you can probably guess, we labeled them camp fridge and pantry, and one is labeled staff fridge and pantry. We were also super petty, and we wrote all of our names all over our snacks in the fridge. My best friend worked at the camp with me. We'll call her Chris, and it was our turn to cook that night. So I went to the staff fridge to grab the ground beef. I immediately noticed that my case of Go-Gurts is gone. They were my go-to snack, and I bought like 3 cases a week. I had just opened my last box like an hour before to have one, and I left it right in front of the ground beef. It sounds crazy, but I knew I did. I closed the fridge door and head to the dining room, Chris closely behind me, and then yell at everyone else.
Alright, who stole all my Go-Gurt?
That night, in addition to Chris and myself, there were the other two summer counselors, two permanent counselors that lived in the area, and then the cousin of one of the permanent counselors. Everyone looked at me wide-eyed, then looked around blankly. I figured it was the cousin because I had never met her before, so I just sucked it up and said,
"Whatever. Just if it has the name on it, please don't eat it."
Then pull Chris back in the kitchen to finish up the spaghetti. We all eat dinner, and then the two permanent counselors volunteer to do the dishes because we let them eat with us. The rest of us head back upstairs to get comfy in the sitting room on the couches and then turn on Family Guy. We're only like 2 minutes in when the cousin will call Sarah, then says,
"Wait, I can't find my phone or wallet."
I pause the show and roll my eyes, still annoyed about the Go-Gurt. Chris says,
"Where did you last have them?"
And Sarah says she left them on the couch before we went downstairs to dinner. Naturally, we all start looking around the small room, turning over couch cushions, looking under the couches, behind them, under blankets, and really wherever. Finally, we're like,
"Are you sure you didn't leave them downstairs?"
She agrees to head downstairs to look with the other two, and Chris and I go into our room, which is connected to the sitting room. We flop down on the bottom of our bunk bed, and I proceed to talk shit about Sarah, who I feel like is ruining our chill night. Our door is open, and I'm shocked when I see a hand kind of sneak into view like it's going to grab the door frame. I then say,
"Hey, did you find them?"
Thinking that Sarah or the other two have somehow made it back upstairs without me hearing them, and have heard me talk shit for the past 5 minutes. But then the hand immediately disappears out of the door frame, and there's no response.
I look at Chris like, what the fuck? And she's looking back at me confused because she never saw the hand. I quickly explain what happened, and then we both jump up and head to the top of the stairs. We yell down for the others, and they yell back that they haven't found them yet. By this point, I'm freaked the fuck out because who the hell is up here with us? Of course, we're those people though, and we start looking around upstairs in our bedroom, the other bedroom, and in the sitting room, and we find nothing and no one. We decided not to say anything yet because I might sound insane. And also, how could someone have gotten downstairs so fast without us hearing them? When we get downstairs, Sarah is super upset and crying. Her cousin then says, come on guys, did someone take her stuff? But Chris and I both know that we didn't, and we say so. Sarah screams that obviously someone took them and we should just be honest, and then things get really heated. I finally decided to then tell them about the hand, because I feel like maybe it'll reduce the tension between us. It does, but then everyone panics. We run around the house like maniacs, looking in every closet or hiding place that the kids use, and find nothing and no one. We end up calling our camp director to come over because the situation has just evolved into chaos. When he gets there, we're all just sitting huddled in the foyer, freaked out, and we then explain what we can. He just doesn't seem convinced that someone was in the house, and threatens to call the cops if one of us doesn't give Sarah back her things. Well, none of us fess up, so he calls the cops. Well, they come over and search the property and then take our statements. It seems so dumb as we repeat our stories, but we didn't have much to go off of but a feeling. They do write up a report for stolen property, and that makes Sarah feel better at least. With the house now secure, everyone leaves except for us four summer counselors who live there. We all spend the night in the same room with the door barricaded, reassuring ourselves that we're being stupid and the phone and wallet will actually turn up somewhere random and we'll just laugh about it. Fast forward a few days. We've all now relaxed a bit. We still haven't found Sarah's things like we expected, but nothing else weird has happened. And we've been occupied with the kids and the job in general. The kids have all gone home at this point, and it's now just the four of us again at the house. We finish cleaning up the outside and lock the gate, and then head in the dining room door. We're all hungry and want snacks. Chris gets to the kitchen first and then says, someone left the kitchen door open again. I mean, it's kinda weird, but kids go in and out that door all day, so of all the doors to be open, this is the least weird. She shuts it, and then I notice the staff fridge door is also cracked open. Then who knows what possessed me, but I go, oh no y'all, he's back. We all then laugh because we just think this is ridiculous. Chris grabs a broom, holds it as a weapon, and then says, let's get them, girls. She starts to throw open the pantry door, screaming, where the fuck are you, motherfucker? And we know you're in here. Show yourself. I'm following behind her laughing, but I start to inexplicably feel uneasy and nervous. She continues her charade into the next room, throwing open two more closet doors. Then she moves into the front room and opens that closet door. She starts another confident rant. We know you're here! When she stops mid-sentence and screams so loudly, skin on my neck prickles. Then she throws the broom in the closet and sprints out the front door, leaving it open. My heart is now pounding so fucking hard at this point, but I'm thinking she's just messing with us. So I turn around and go the other way into the foyer and out the front door. I see her booking it down the street towards the coffee shop, and I'm just like, okay, what is she doing? As soon as I turn back around to find the others, he's just there. An older man who looks really dirty and has hardly any teeth. He's just grinning at me. He has his hands up and says, I didn't mean no harm, while slowly backing away down the street in the other direction. It's so creepy because even though he says this, it's like he doesn't mean it. It's like his tone and the grin are mocking me. I'm frozen for a second, then I sputter out, you can't just, leave. And he just says again with that same damn grin, I didn't mean no harm. Then turns and runs. I fumble in my pocket for my phone and dial 911, then go to follow him. But as soon as I reach the edge of the house, he's gone. The next events are kind of a blur. Sounds wild, but we really all thought we just freaked ourselves out. No way in hell did we actually think someone was in the house. The cops took our statements and reminded us that we needed to keep the door shut at all times, no matter what. Our director apologized profusely for not initially believing us. My parents wanted me to come back home for the remainder of the summer, but I was just like, hey, what else could really happen? Chris was the one who had it the worst. She was absolutely terrified to stay in that house. She told me later that when she opened the door, he was grinning at her with dead eyes, like he was waiting for her to finally find him. She said that she will never forget his face. We're still best friends at almost 30, and I can't bring up that summer to her if she hasn't been drinking. That's basically it. I think what kept me up at night after that were just the unanswered questions. Like, how long had he been in the house? Why did he randomly decide to take the phone and wallet of the one person who didn't work there? Had he listened to our private conversations? Watched us get dressed and shower? How much food had he stolen that we didn't notice? Where the fuck had he gone when we were looking for him on spaghetti night? What hiding places did we miss? Was he under my bed at night or at any point during my stay? I don't know all these answers, and I know I'll never have them, but I'm thankful our interaction wasn't worse, I guess. I'm feeling really scared right now, and I could use some advice. This is a bit of a long story, so bear with me. A few months ago, this guy started showing up at my favorite coffee shop. At first, he seemed nice enough. We had a few casual conversations, but it was clear he was interested in more than just being friends. He asked me out a couple of times, and each time I politely declined. I even mentioned that I have a girlfriend, hoping he'd get the hint. My girlfriend and I have been together for 3 years, and we're really happy. I thought he would respect that, but instead, things took a turn for the worse. After I rejected him for the third time, I had started noticing him everywhere. At first, I thought it was just a coincidence. Maybe we just liked the same places. But then it got weird. He'd be at the grocery store when I was shopping, at the park when my girlfriend and I were taking a walk, and even outside my apartment building. I tried to brush it off as paranoia. A few weeks ago, my girlfriend and I were at the park. It was a beautiful day and we were just enjoying each other's company. I saw the same guy in the distance and my heart sank. I tried to ignore him. That night, I got a message on Instagram from an obviously fake account. It was a video of us at the park with a message that said something creepy like, "Cute couple. Shame one of you is with the wrong person." We were both freaked out. I reported the account and blocked it, but videos kept coming. Different accounts, different angles. Since then, I've stopped going out as much, and when I do, I always feel like I'm being watched. My girlfriend tries to be strong for the both of us, but I can tell she's scared too. We've talked about moving or calling the police, but we're both unsure. Has anyone else dealt with something like this? How did you handle it? Any advice on what we should do next? I just want to feel safe again. I'm from France and it happened 6 years ago when I was 20. So I came home after sleeping in my boyfriend's place. It was like 8 a.m. Super early because my boyfriend started his shift and my parents were already gone like an hour earlier. So I was alone at home and I knew it. So I came home and I directly went to my bedroom to continue my day, but before climbing the stairs, I saw that the kitchen door and window was wide open. I was surprised, but I didn't think I was in any danger since, you know, I was inside my own house. You have to know that my father is super paranoid, and there's no way he could have forgotten to close the windows before leaving the house for 2 weeks, even if I stayed because I used to sleep in my boyfriend's house most of the time. but I was barely awake, so I just closed the door. I check the kitchen and the living room just to be sure, and then go up to my room. There are three rooms on the second floor. I went to my room to change, then I went to the bathroom and then returned back to my room. I'm not sure why I did this because I usually never do this, but for whatever reason, I decided to close my door. I was scrolling on my phone, and like 5 minutes later, I heard what sounded like footsteps right behind my door. Someone was there the whole time while I was just going about in my room, completely vulnerable. I was terrified. My heart dropped into my stomach, and I couldn't move. I took the first thing in front of me to defend myself, my Babyliss. I stared at my door, waiting for the person to open up and kill me, or worse. I was ready to jump out the window and die if I had seen the door open. But minutes passed, and I heard the person on the stairs. I don't know how long I stayed there immobile, but eventually I called my boyfriend, and he came over to my rescue. At first, I thought I was crazy because I didn't actually see anything, and I couldn't believe that it even really happened. But my boyfriend confirmed that they forced the door and windows in the kitchen, so they really were there. They were silently waiting for me to sleep before leaving my house. I thought I was home alone, feeling safe. Only I wasn't. It was very traumatic. I can barely stay alone somewhere without freaking out now. I live alone and I'm constantly afraid that someone's trying to break in. But the worst part is that they didn't even take anything. My mom's MacBook and jewelry, my PS4, my dad's gaming setup. Everything was so easy to take, but they didn't. I can't stop thinking that they were here for another reason. You also have to know that at the time I was very active on Snapchat. I used to post every day, and I used to always post just about every part of my day on my Snapchat story. So my 5K followers that I had on social media knew everything about me at this time. Since then, I stopped all of my activities on Snapchat. I guess I just want some feedback from others. Do you think it's related to my Snapchat? Or was it something else entirely? In early March of 2013, my husband and I were driving back from a marriage retreat that had been held at the Hyatt Regency in Lake Tahoe. Spring approached slowly, so snow still blanketed the Sierra Nevadas, and we dressed in coats and boots when we ventured outside of our hotel during the retreat. Still, with the snow thawing out slowly, we enjoyed viewing the occasional greenish foliage peeking out from the thick layer of snow among the tree lines, as well as the towering embankments of the Sierras, and made for the perfect landscape pictures, the kind you may find on desk calendars or stock photos sold online. We had enjoyed the marriage retreat and relished in the experience of staying at a 5-star hotel, and now we were given the privilege to drive through the most breathtaking parts of the Sierras. A final treat as we headed home and back to the work week. So we had to take pictures. Or rather, my husband had to. Not that I don't enjoy a photo or two. I do, but he always insists on a picture of us and a picture of me. And I'm not photogenic. Always when we traveled, he would stop the car, get out to take photos, and then subject us to ugly photos of ourselves that we'd probably end up deleting from our phone later on anyway. Fortunately, we would get the occasional gold nugget of a photo, and that's what he was striving for on our trip down the mountain on that day. So I obliged, allowing him to relish in his photo taking of the landscape of him and me, even though I was pretty sure I looked atrocious. There were several vista points and turnoffs along the Highway 80 for picture taking. We just had to be cautious when pulling off the highway since the road twisted around cliffs and embankments. And even though the weather conditions didn't require snow chains this particular weekend, we knew the roads could still be dangerous and slippery. Some of these vista points were just off the side of the highway, but these vista points could appear quickly when we drove around a bend, and we didn't want a chance sliding across the road in an attempt to stop. Other vista points required us to actually exit the highway and drive a short distance away, and these were more plausible for my husband's photo escapades. We took one such exit on our descent through the mountains.
The exit took us on a short road that dipped under the highway and over to a clearing with a field bristling with bushes devoid of foliage, but with the Sierra Mountains in the background, creating a striking contrast of snow-covered mountains against the beautiful blue sky. We could still see the highway to our left, a good 500 yards away, but if we angled our phones away from the highway, we could still capture the beauty of nature in all its glory. Better yet, elements of spring revealed itself with slightly warmer temperatures, so we could take photos without multiple layers of clothing. So we pulled the car to the shoulder, got out of the car, and walked down a slight embankment to get a better photo. I took a photo of my husband and him of me. As we walked back up the embankment toward our car, we had heard a loud noise of a car's motor in the distance. I turned and saw a dark-colored Porsche zoom down the highway rather quickly considering the twisting road, then pull off the exit we had just taken, tear down the road right in front of us, then stop behind our car on the shoulder. It was almost as if the driver was in a hurry. To what, I didn't know, but I figured that the driver had stopped quickly to enjoy the scenery as we did. Maybe snap a photo for himself before rushing to his next rendezvous. Instead, the driver got out of his car and asked us if he could take our picture. What struck me about this younger dude was his appearance. From a distance, he looked homeless, eccentric, like one of those guys living on beaches dressed in worn-out clothes with holes in their pants. He sported a grunge-like look with brownish shaggy hair, the beginnings of a beard displaying itself in patches around his face, and a plaid shirt. But as we walked up to him, in the middle of him asking us that question, we got a closer inspection and noticed he was clean despite his grunge look. Upon a closer look, I got the impression he was a rich kid in his 20s, perhaps someone donning the messy look as his own outcry against society. But getting back to the scene, as we headed back up the embankment toward our car, he asked us in a friendly voice, "Hey guys, would you like a picture?" It wasn't abnormal for us to hear that. Often when you're taking pictures on vacation, you may ask other tourists to take a photo of yourself and your spouse. Or someone walking may initiate their photo-taking services, and this exchange took a matter of a few seconds. So we both just said, "Sure, why not?" and handed my phone over for pictures before our brains had time to process that the scenario we found ourselves in was now off. We were the only ones on the road other than this guy and apparently his girlfriend who sat hidden in the shadows in the Porsche's passenger seat and didn't move an inch. By the time Grunge Dude had us take a few steps back down the embankment for the picture, my dumb brain finally kicked in and said, "Hey, something's off here." But by then he had already stepped back toward his car, taking several pictures of us from my phone until he achieved the perfect shot. Though we grinned for the photos, we stood on edge with me wondering, would he take this opportunity to take off with my phone, jump in his car, and speed off? Uneasiness came over me as he continued taking photos, stepping backwards closer to his car a little bit each time. A scene from National Lampoon's European Vacation popped into my mind, one featuring a nice man offering to take a video of the Griswold characters who had newly arrived in France or Germany, or some European country. The Griswolds naively accepted the offer, and the nice old man encouraged them to take off their shoes and stand knee-deep in a plaza fountain for a better video shot. Only the man ran off with their video camera instead. This led to another comical conflict later on in the film, but I wasn't thinking about that. No. I was thinking in those 1 or 2 seconds how much of an idiot I was for letting this guy take my phone to supposedly take pictures. But when he took one last step toward his car, my husband, who had the same uneasiness, then abruptly and quickly took a few steps up the embankment, reached forward, and then quickly took my phone from the man's hands. "Thank you, that's good. Those photos will work," he said, laughing off the awkwardness. I joined my husband at his side, and we waved at the grunge dude's passenger, who made no effort to look our way. I think my husband even asked if they wanted a picture too, if my memory serves me right, but the grunge dude declined, saying his goodbyes to us, got back in his car, then made a U-turn and left. Just like that. And the bizarre thing? When the grunge dude originally got off the highway and parked behind us, he'd been driving westbound on Highway 80, the same direction we were. But now as we watched his car tear up the road from us and jump back onto Highway 80, only to head eastbound back toward Lake Tahoe,
with the same robust speed as when he had made his appearance. Why had he done this only to turn around? What was his point of taking our photos and then returning from where he'd come from? What was he planning with us? And what had deterred him from going through with it? Was he on drugs? And why hadn't his female companion said anything? And why did he come and leave with such urgency, sporting his car's motor and taking off so quickly? We noted how bizarre this was, but at least the uneasiness had waned, and now I had my phone safely with me. We got back in our car and continued westbound on the highway, still not sure what to make of this, but we just pushed that out of our mind as we continued to drive down that mountain, maneuvering the twisting, bending roads and admiring the nature around us. But about 20 or so minutes later, the uneasiness returned when we came upon a car accident just around the bend. An upside-down SUV had crashed into the steep cliff to our right. Transit authority and state trooper vehicles tended to the driver while making sure we passed through safely. The incident is unrelated, but something about this and our encounter with the strange grunge dude made us uneasy, tainting the atmosphere, and this unsettling feeling lingered even as we and the other vehicles passed the accident scene slowly. I don't remember if I saw the driver or an ambulance, but I knew the accident was bad if the vehicle had overturned. The unsettling feeling remained with us during the rest of our 3-hour trip back home, but nothing else came of it. So in the end, it was anticlimactic. Still, the encounter with the grunge dude still stuck with us. My husband later said that he had a flashing thought that the guy may pull out a gun on us. I wondered if he was a thief, and maybe for whatever reason decided to not take our phone or valuables. Or a later thought that came was this. What if he wasn't there for malicious reasons, but perhaps a divine intervention? It wasn't that long after this encounter that we happened to stumble on that car accident. Had his picture taking delayed us enough to avoid getting caught in the accident and flipping over ourselves? Or maybe that's my imagination gone wild. Still, the bizarre encounter always remains. I'm a 22-year-old female. I'm about to graduate college with a degree in criminal justice, so all of my classes are based on my degree. Most of them are about learning about government U.S. court systems and the fundamentals of them. Criminology, police systems, so on and so forth. But the coolest part of it all is the electives we have at my university for my degree. We have around 7 to 8 different elective criminal justice classes we can take for advanced credits. I've taken sex crimes, which was one of the most interesting and disturbing classes I've taken, and I could write an entire post about one particular story. But my favorite elective class I've taken is my Homeland Security class with Dr. B. Name change for privacy. Dr. B is the type of guy you look at and go, "You were a cop?" Not in a bad way, of course, but with a skinny stature, way of speaking, and thick glasses, it's hard to picture. Dr. B took a liking to me, since I was the only girl in that class, let alone the only one who would engage in conversation in class. So one day before finals, I asked him what his most interesting story from being a cop was. Here's the story he told a room of guys and a very interested 20-something kid. It was around mid to late 80s. Dr. B was on patrol with his partner Sam. At the time, he was fresh out of the academy, so you have to have a seasoned officer with you for a certain period of time. Sam had been in for about 15 years, I'd say, so Dr. B was assigned with him. They were patrolling a pretty nice neighborhood when they pulled up to a stop sign and saw a white man in his mid-30s speed walking on the sidewalk. His clothes weren't that of a homeless man, but not the type you'd see in that neck of the woods. Flip-flops, basketball shorts, and a big t-shirt. Sam told Dr. B to follow him. When Dr. B questioned him as to why, Sam replied, "I don't know. I don't have a good feeling, though. Just trust me." So they follow him down the sidewalk, flip the lights on, and stop him. Sam and Dr. B get out of the patrol car and begin talking with the man. Dr. B let Sam do most of the talking while he observed his body language. Fidgety but not suspicious, restless almost, but with a calm voice and demeanor. He kept pulling his shorts up and his shirt down, Dr. B noted to us. Sam then asked if there was something the matter with his clothing, to which the man replied that the shorts were a little big. Before Dr. B knew it, Sam had the man on the hood of the car, pinning his hands behind his back and cuffing him. Dr. B started frantically asking what in the world he was doing. When Sam hiked the guy's shirt up, a Glock was in the waistband of the shorts, as well as a bag of what appeared to be cocaine in one of the shorts' pockets. Apparently, the guy was a user and had been given a bad deal of drugs. He found out where the dealer lived, and he was going to rob him, or worse. When Dr. B asked Sam how he knew, Sam just said, "I got a bad feeling and just went with my gut." And wouldn't you know, the third time he pulled his shorts up, the gun pressed against the t-shirt. Dr. B said that he never doubted Sam's intuition ever again. I would like to keep my name anonymous for privacy reasons. This happened to me 2 years ago in the beginning of March of 2022. I work the PM shift all the way until the late shift in my job, and I usually get off around 1:30 to 2 a.m. So when I go back driving home, I would usually take a tunnel, which was the quickest way to my house. One night, I was casually just driving back home from work, and I took a tunnel that I always take when going home. And from a distance, I saw a car up ahead with their hazard lights on. I assumed this person just stopped because they were probably doing something or having some difficulties with their vehicle, like a flat tire or something. But as I got closer, a hooded man stepped out of the vehicle and then pointed a gun directly at me. I thought quickly and put my car in reverse, and then started reversing the hell out of there as quickly as I could. Kind of like that scene in Too Fast, Too Furious where Brian was driving in the freeway backwards. As I kept reversing quickly, I lost control of my vehicle and crashed the right back side of it on the wall in the tunnel. Luckily for me, my car was still able to keep going, so I put my car back in drive and turned back to where I came from, taking another route back home. Obviously, I was terrified, and I just kept telling myself, "What the fuck?" over and over again on the way back home because of what I had just experienced. Once I got home, I bursted into my room scared and then questioning myself about what the hell just happened. I called the cops telling them about the incident, but unfortunately everything happened so fast that I really couldn't give a good description of the vehicle or how the guy looked due to him wearing a hoodie. I really couldn't believe that happened to me, and I had so many questions about it, like, was that guy looking to rob me? I'm pretty sure he was, because if he really wanted to kill me, he could have easily done so by just simply pulling the trigger once the gun was pointed at me. Or maybe he thought that by simply pointing the gun at me, I was going to be too scared to do anything, so he was going to just walk up to my car and take my phone and wallet. I've told this story to a few of my friends and coworkers. They were in shock too, and they told me I was really lucky. One of them even brought up the theory that what if the gun the guy had was fake? But whether it was fake or not, I wasn't going to stick around to find out. Ever since that night, I've never taken that tunnel back home again. I always take a completely different route now when going back home. I hope that nobody else fell victim to whatever he was planning on doing to me. I didn't hear about anything that happened in that tunnel for the rest of the week, so I assumed that the guy either fled or was possibly caught by a cop. I want to start by saying I've never shared this story, but I've always wanted to. I'll be changing the names and keeping the city I'm in out of the story for safety reasons. So when I was 7, my oldest sister, who we'll call Lily, started dating a guy she met at a club. We knew nothing about him other than he was from Mexico and he was visiting his cousin here in the US. He was very charming. I remember him having blue eyes, blonde hair, and he was extremely tall, which was just my sister's type. My mom didn't really like him, and she would often tell my sister to not get too attached, as he was only here on a 6-month travel visa and would eventually have to go back. My sister was 18 and rebellious, so not only did she become attached, she had asked him to stay past his visa. We live in a sanctuary city, so he agreed to stay. Eventually, she ended up pregnant, dropped out of college, and he moved into our home with us. He was really nice and he always helped financially. He always seemed to have money and was always working in our garage. My mom was a single mom and never used the garage, so we never went in to see what he did in there. Well, eventually he rented out a house a few blocks away from ours, and we were kind of shocked that he had the money for it, because our neighborhood wasn't the cheapest in the city, but it was one of the safest. My mom was happy that they were close, but was also questioning where he got the money for this home. Time passed and it was a Saturday night in the evening, and my sister was pounding on our door with her son. She was also pregnant with her second child. She was flustered and she had dirt all over her arms and clothes. My mama then asked her where her husband was, and that's when she told us that he had been selling drugs for a cartel. Apparently, he wasn't giving them the full profit of what he was making, and they found out, so they gave him a week to come up with the money, but he didn't. My sister was feeding her son in his nursery when she heard them break in and begin to beat on her husband. She had her keys and diaper bag in her son's nursery, so she opened up a window and jumped out and then ran to my mom's house with her baby. My mom wanted to call the police, but my sister begged her not to. We also found out that her husband would beat and cheat on her multiple times. We begged her to leave him, and she didn't want to. They ended up moving homes, and the abuse only got worse, as did the cheating. We were really worried for her as she just had her second child, and she had postpartum depression. She also told us that he no longer worked for the cartel, and we didn't believe her, but we knew that we couldn't help her. Some time passed, and eventually my sister told us that they were moving to Mexico. We were in shock. My mom begged her not to go, and I cried to her multiple times, but her mind was made up. We were worried that the abuse would only get worse over there, and that he would continue working for the cartels. We found out that he was using drugs through their entire relationship, and it really worried us so much. The day had came for them to leave, and she took a flight to Mexico with her two kids, while he drove to Mexico to do one last job for the cartel. At the time, we had no idea that this was happening, but the day before his drive, he did ask to grab the tools that he had left in our garage, and my mom let him. He took two huge duffel bags and left. Well, 2 days later, around 2 a.m., a bunch of masked men came to our home and banged on every window. They were shaking our doors and screaming for us to open up. Immediately, my mom and brother called the cops, but they weren't much help. Our neighbor across the street saw everything happen, and he came out with his rifle and then shot it in the air. He also called the cops as well, but I guess two calls was enough to get them to come faster, but not fast enough. I remember shaking after seeing multiple men also had their own guns. Finally, we heard sirens, and all of the men left in their own trucks and sped off. We called my sister to tell her about what happened, and she instantly broke down, telling us that her husband had been storing drugs in our garage as well as money. My mom was extremely pissed off about this, and we started packing our bags to go stay with family. We went from family to family, but it didn't matter because they always found us. For months, we were stalked. My sister's husband was nowhere to be found. Whenever we would try to drive back home, they would always show up and just watch us. Life became scary, and the cops wouldn't help us. It was to the point that my mom decided to move us all to her vacation home in Mexico. She first sent my brother over with my sister and her kids, as they were the most anxious. She then began the process of getting my school transcripts. During this time, my mom also sold her truck and got a small car to try and throw off the stalkers, but that didn't work. They had all of my uncle's plates at this point, and they knew where we were. All of my aunts were telling my mom to not move to Mexico. They told her it would die down and they would keep us safe. Well, that same week, we were watching the news as we packed our bags to leave, and my sister's husband's face was on the TV screen. He was an accomplice to murder and cartel ties. What was supposed to be a 3-day job turned into tying loose ends for the cartel that he worked for. We also found out that not only was he not giving the full profit to the cartel, but he was also stealing drugs from them. They told him that they knew where my sister and his kids were, and if he didn't continue to do what they say, they would kill them. Once we saw that he had been put in jail, we postponed our move, and slowly everything went back to normal. We were left alone. My sister continued to live in Mexico with my brother due to anxiety, but the rest of us moved back home. A few months passed and I was playing alone in my backyard when a red pickup truck pulled up in the alley and they tried to take me. This actually happened 3 times. On the 3rd time, the police came on time and were able to arrest the man. He had ties to the cartel that my sister's husband worked for. I'm not really sure what he wanted from me, but this whole situation made me develop long-term PTSD and an anxiety disorder. I now live alone with my daughter, and I have multiple locks and a security system in place. I hate being alone in my mother's house, and I avoid being there at all costs. My sister eventually divorced that man, and later remarried, and she's happy and at peace. I think deep down we're all really scared that if Rex comes out of jail, it'll all start again. But I really hope that doesn't happen.
Hi guys, here's my morning routine. First, I drink olive oil. Next, I take an ice bath. Ooh, feeling super healthy.
If your health advice sounds strange coming from a kid, maybe it's just strange. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com. Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
2 ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
I'm 22 years old now. We used to have a neighbor who was around 60 to 70 years old. He died a few years ago. When he was still alive, however, he would cause us so much trouble. Scratched our car, poisoned our apple trees and grass, and he also blew up a firework near me to cause me to temporarily go deaf in one ear when I was 4 years old. All kinds of things. His son was a judge in our city, so pretty much everything we took to court was against us. I remember my dad often called us from work to tell us not to be alone at home, and that we would have to stay at grandma's. When I was little, I think around 6 to 7, I would frequently have nightmares about seeing a face outside of the bathroom window. The window is above our bathtub. It's high enough that no one can actually see it unless they climb the roof of our shed, which is underneath the bathroom window in our garden. Coincidentally, the shed is directly next to a fence that separates our garden from the neighbors. I still remember the dreams. I remember having them pretty much every other night. I never told my parents when I was little because we never really talked about anything, so I didn't really share anything that was happening to me. Well, I grew up thinking they were just dreams and that was it. I did mention them to my therapist last year because we were discussing some personal problems and I felt like this was kinda connected. After coming home, my mom had asked me what I talked about with my therapist, so I finally shared that I used to have such dreams. I never really thought about them being real, but she told me that I actually did tell her that I saw our neighbor on our shed's roof. I don't remember telling her that, but she said that I did mention it several times, and even my friends told her that they saw him there when they came over to our house and it creeped them out. Apparently, I never mentioned him watching me shower, but after she told me that, it really clicked for me, and it was as if I suddenly remembered that, yeah, I do think it was him. It would make sense, and the fact that it happened still creeps me out. There was another incident that also creeped me out. It happened when I was around 9 to 10. I went to the balcony in the evening. The balcony door was in my room, and I often went there to call my cat home in the evening, but this time I saw a person standing in the middle of our garden. It was already dark out, and I couldn't really tell who it was. I waited for a little bit to see what the person did, but I didn't really see him move. It was as if he was just standing and staring in front of him. I then called out, "Dad?" Because obviously I expected it to be him, even though I found it odd. But then the person looked up at me, and even though it was dark, I could still tell it was someone else. I think it was partly because my eyes had just adjusted to the dark, and I could make out the silhouette of the person better. Well, I went to go tell my dad, who was downstairs, but when he looked, there was no one there. When I went back upstairs to my room and went to the balcony again, I noticed my neighbor's back door closing just when I looked there. I don't remember if it was directly the next day or a few days later, but our grass turned brown and we found out it was poisoned, most of the grass being out of reach from his property. I'm a 35-year-old single mother of three, and this just happened to me a few years ago. It was a chilly evening with the sun dipping low over the horizon as I then pulled into our quiet suburban neighborhood after a quick trip to the gas station. The tank was now full, but a sense of uneasiness settled over me as I then parked in our driveway. I glanced around, noticing the usual calm of the street, yet something felt off to me. As I gathered my purse and keys, I then caught a glimpse of movement from the corner of my eye, a figure quickly ducking behind a nearby hedge. My heart skipped a beat, nerves tingling as I hurried to unlock the front door. The house felt way too quiet, too empty, and I shivered despite the warmth from the inside. I quickly checked on my three children, Timmy, Emily, and little Jake, all safe thankfully, and lost in their evening cartoons. They were oblivious to the unease that was gripping me. I tried to shake off the feeling, just chalking it up to a stressful day and just an overactive imagination, but as I glanced out the window, a shadow darted across the yard, confirming my worst fears. The figure was tall and dark, blending into the gathering dusk. Panic surged through me, adrenaline kicking in as I locked the doors and drew the curtains. Every sound outside amplified in my ears. The creak of the porch steps, the rustle of leaves in the breeze. I started debating with myself on whether or not to call the police, but I hesitated, unsure if I was overreacting. Hours passed with a tense silence, broken only by the occasional distant car passing by in my neighborhood. I finally managed to coax the children to bed, their innocent sleep a stark contrast to my racing dark thoughts. I tiptoed back downstairs, trying to reassure myself that it was just my imagination playing tricks. Surely I'm just tired and paranoid, right? Well, then came a soft tapping at the living room window. My heart leaped into my throat. I crept closer, peering out cautiously. There, standing in the shadows, was Mr. Johnson from two houses down, a man in the neighborhood known for his odd behavior and intense stares. His eyes were fixed on me, a creepy and cold smile spreading across his face. I stumbled back in horror, knocking over a lamp that crashed to the floor. The noise had startled Mr. Johnson, but instead of retreating, he seemed emboldened. He gestured for me to come closer, his demeanor unsettlingly calm.
"Come out, dear,"
he called in a low, coaxing voice.
"I just want to talk."
Fear paralyzed me as I fumbled for my phone, my fingers now trembling over the emergency dial. Mr. Johnson's expression darkened, his movements becoming more urgent. He paced along the edge of my yard, muttering to himself in a way that sent chills down my spine. Just as I dialed 911, I heard a loud crash from the back of the house. My heart pounded as I realized he was now trying to break into my house. Without hesitation, I bolted upstairs, bursting into the children's room to scoop them into my arms. We all just huddled together in the closet, my phone pressed to my ear as I whispered urgently to the dispatcher. Minutes felt like hours as we waited in terrified silence, my little ones crying and confused. Then finally, I heard it. The sirens in the distance beginning closer and closer. I was now safe. Mr. Johnson vanished into the darkness just as the police car screeched to a stop outside our house. Officers flooded the area, searching for any sign of the intruder. They found him. Mr. Johnson was lurking in the bushes at the edge of our property, his face twisted in a mixture of defiance and derangement. He was arrested and taken away, but the fear lingered long after. I went through the process of getting a restraining order, but I ultimately decided to just move somewhere new as well. So that's what I did. We moved to a much safer area where I could raise my children without the haunting specter of our creepy neighbor. Even now, years later, I can't seem to forget the terror of that night. The feeling of being watched. The fear for my children's safety. It's a story that I rarely tell people, but one that serves as a chilling reminder that sometimes the darkest threats can lurk just beyond our own front doors. Hey everyone, that's about it for today's stories. If you have your own story that you would like to send, you can send it in at southerncannibal.com, or you can email it at southerncannibalstories@gmail.com. I look forward to telling your story. Have a good night or good day, everyone. And remember, to always...